Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we continue to review the PGA Merchandise Show in Orlando and welcome back Mike Morgan of Northwestern. So stay tuned to get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you're along. We are back from Orlando and happy to say we are. It was a great show. It really was. A lot of interesting things and people are really making a difference in and around the industry. And this hour's guest has been on before, but it's this story that we're following. And every time we tap into this Northwestern story, something new comes about. And we get a chance to talk with Joe, the mastermind behind the whole company. But he's got this guy with 35-plus years of experience in the golf industry running the show. And you knew who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Mike Morgan, our buddy, who has been doing phenomenal things in a short period of time. Mike, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you on, as always.
Thank you, Keith. Always good to be on. Appreciate it.
No problem. I appreciate, you know, I don't have you on just because of Northwestern. He's like the top guy there. 30-plus years for working for a guy named Wally Uline over at Titleist. And I got a chance to spend a bunch of time with Joe. And that, yeah, you know, he's an interesting guy on many levels. And he really is forthcoming with a lot of information and things and how things came about. But when it came to talking about the way he ended up selecting you to be his guy, was you were very, very successful in sales at Titleist. And it wasn't that you were the top guy multiple times. That certainly helped your cause too. But Joe said he was the top guy in Indiana. He wasn't selling Titleist in Florida or California or New York. He was in Indiana. And I just thought kudos to you, but I just thought that was very telling as to how that came about.
Yeah, it's not one of the top markets in the country, that's for sure. I was fortunate, you know, a lot of good things fall in place when things like that happen, and you know, you get corporate orders going, you get some good weather in your territory. There's just a lot of things that happen that are just key to the success of something that is better than you forecasted, and things are falling into place. That's just really how it happens.
Well, and where is Northwestern these days? Of course, it's in Indiana. So kind of full circle for you. Like, you know, because we talked a little bit about the West Virginia. You and I have spoken about that on the show and off air, but Joe talked about that as well and working with the governor and having a great opportunity. And it just came about, to, you know, let's just do this in Indiana because it makes more sense.
It does. I mean, it's logistically, it was great to have it here versus West Virginia. They were offering us some nice dollars to consider coming to West Virginia. We got into some back and forth on how that would work and things like that. And the more we got thinking about it, we thought, you know, it probably just makes more sense to find something, you know, either in Columbus, Ohio, or somewhere in Indianapolis area where we're located. So it just made a lot of sense. We were blessed to be able to find a place that they were excited to bring us in as a new tenant and some nice space that we can grow into. So, yeah, it was excellent. Good decision for us.
It did sound like Columbus was a serious consideration for a while, and then the numbers just didn't work out at all.
No, it just didn't, you know, work as well as we thought it might. And it's really better probably over here for several reasons, just because I'm – you know, running the sales part of it too, along with some other people, but it's the office is right here. I can be really close to meet with key people at the office, and it's good. I mean, it's good for us to be able to have it right here from a sales perspective and then also a distribution perspective. It's in the Midwest. It's easy to get product out. It's not overly expensive to ship from Indiana versus shipping out of maybe West Virginia, or East Coast, or the West Coast, and it just made more sense. We're more centrally located.
Yeah, that makes a big difference. Oh, I did want to mention John Daly was at the show as well at the Northwestern booth, but he was a picture on the wall. So you know, we've said this before.
He didn't have much to say.
He did not. You know, and usually when I run to JD, there, you know, he's not always a man of few words. I will say that.
Exactly. He kept his composure, had his picture taken with a lot of people, but he was a picture on the wall.
Yeah, indeed. It was good to see him at the show regardless from that standpoint. And Joe and I talked a little bit about that kind of thing. But that's a great spokesperson to have. And congratulations. I know you were heavily involved in that negotiation as well. But John wants the best, and he wants the best for people, not just for himself, for the right. upcoming golfers and such. And this hour with Mike Morgan, the head man at Northwestern, we'll talk about some of those things that they're doing. But first and foremost, I mean, that is a major person to have. I won't say on staff, but he's kind of on staff.
Yeah, let me explain just a little bit. So we just decided, hey, who's the best potential spokesperson or face of our brand? And it really kind of boiled down to who we are as a company, which is a brand that's, we say, for the 85%ers. It's for people that just don't feel like they need to spend as much as some of the major companies are asking for golf equipment. As a comparison, the new drivers at the show with the major companies, you know, they have gone up because of tariffs, which I predicted would happen because we had to deal with the same thing. They're up $100 at retail. So John's world, as an example, he bought a golf course down in Dardanelle, Arkansas, his hometown, that was struggling. It was a country club. He just decided, hey, let's just turn this into an every man's, every woman's type golf course. People can afford to play it. You can join it for $100 a year. If you walk, you pay $100 a year to play that golf course. John wants it accessible to kids, adults, grandparents. I mean, anyone who could get around a golf course and wants to play, he wanted to make it affordable. And that's one of the reasons he hooked up with Northwestern, is that's the same concept is, hey, listen, we want to be able to have pricing that's accessible to the big majority of people. Golf does not have to be expensive in equipment. It may be more expensive over on the country club side and the higher end public golf courses. And you have to be careful where you pick to play, just because if you're price conscious. But overall, golf's gone up in pricing across the board, and we're just trying to hold it down. John loves the fact that the price point of the product is really for the every man, every woman type player.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's always interesting when you say stuff, Mike, but in that particular place where you said golf has gone up across the board, it's more expensive to play it, it's more expensive to... But for equipment, I can't believe a driver went up another $100. I mean, I didn't quite get that straight memo, but it was already like $650.
Yeah, it's now $750. Your major players are now $750 at the PGA show.
But it doesn't cost anywhere near that to manufacture it.
No, sir, it does not. But to market it the way they do, and they do a great job. You got to give them credit. I mean, it's like I tell the retailers. I mean, I can help you make more money and sell price point products, you know, that'll fit a larger majority of players, but I won't be able to force as many people into the store for you or the pro shop just because I'm giving so much back to you rather than taking it and spending it on the front end on tour players and advertising. You know, we'll do a nice job with social influencers, John Daly, those types of things, but I'm not going to spend it. I don't have it to spend, first of all. $85 million on tour players and contracts for social influencers and advertising and all that. It's just the way it is. And it's interesting because if you charge $750 for a driver at retail, you expect the manufacturer to force the consumer to come in and buy that. And we're not in that position. We're in a position where we say, listen, we have a great value at $229. We know it's very close in terms of its ability to perform against the competition. They're made in the same same factories. So we know they're really close. It's just we don't spend that money in terms of advertising and tour players. And you know, John's just a great spokesman for us from that perspective, fitting that everyday golfer.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. And I have come up with this slogan. I'm going to give it to Mike right now. If he wants it, he can have it. But he knows this already. These are not your grandpa's Northwestern clubs.
That's correct. Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
It is crazy. My grandfather, he actually played with Jackie Burke clubs, but my first set was Northwestern, and I know that's I don't know if I'm in your demo there, but that's part of the reason I know you guys kind of reinvigorated, brought the phoenix from the abyss to reinvigorate and recreate and re-innovate with Northwestern. But that's the the rub there is like, yes, people think that's still the inexpensive. At one point I was talking to Joe about this. It was interesting because Joe's really knowledgeable. He's like, I just was waiting for the family to give up the mark. And it's like, because that at one time Northwestern was the largest golf club manufacturer in the world.
Correct.
I mean, it's just like 8 million clubs a month. I mean, the numbers that I've seen are like makes you scratch your head. You're like, how can this be? But apparently,
it was a lot of golf clubs. But keep in mind, they were ahead of their time in terms of what I call marketing, like the masses. And they might sign a player like a Tom Weisskopf or a Bob Murphy back in the day. Some of your listeners might remember those people. And they were great players in their day. But they would literally say, Northwestern would say, listen, we'll pay you $10,000 or something. It might be equal to the second place finish back then. Today it wouldn't even get you the entry fee into the tournament. But and then they'd say, listen, we're going to put your name on a set of golf clubs, and then we're going to put that into a catalog for Sears. We'll go in the Sears catalog. Bob Murphy might have gone to Sears. Weisskopf might have gone to Penny's. Another one might have gone into Austad's. Gary Player might have been in service merchandise. I mean, it could have been lots of places, but they got percentages of those golf clubs, and that's very similar to what we did with John Daly. But keep in mind, that's where a lot of golf clubs were sold. Traditional channels were where you saw majority of golf clubs sold. Northwestern sold golf clubs in lots of different channels, some of them really non-traditional.
Yeah, it's interesting because Northwestern is headed in that direction, and I don't know if the ink is dried. I know you guys are dealing with a major retail entity, for the latest things that you guys have coming out of Northwestern, which we'll talk about in the next segment. But once that ink dries, I mean, it's a huge, huge deal.
Correct. It's just it's a bit of the Northwestern way, and it's how I still believe, and Joe does too, that Northwestern can be sold lots of different channels, and we have other ideas on where to take it, but certainly traditional golf in terms of retailers and golf pro shops will be sold in those facilities as well. But we're not saying no to, mass big box opportunities where, quite frankly, Northwestern really did well in the past. That's how they sold, 7 or 8 million golf clubs at a time. That's just how it happened.
Yeah, I know. I've seen. This is not what I'm talking about from a Costco standpoint. That's not the big box we're talking about. But who knows whether they end up there or not. But that's, you've seen clubs in Costco for sure, and Costco did not make their clubs. So we're with Mike Morgan, longtime veteran of the golf industry and the head man at Northwestern Golf. We'll be back. He's going to spend the hour with us, so we got lots to talk about, including next segment. We'll let you in on the latest stuff that Northwestern has going. We'll be back.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
We are with Mike Morgan, the head guy at Northwestern. CEO, president, CEO, I always get your title. You don't care about the business cards. That's not what happens in your world at all. So, you know, if I misspeak, I apologize because I don't have this card right in front of me, nor do I think it has that stuff on there anyway. But the big thing, well, there's a lot of big things we saw at the Northwestern booth, but the kids' golf clubs, I have to say, that was pretty impressive. And, of course, with JD being involved, that makes it big because he raised his son. Junior is little John is quite a player himself. You know, the University of Arkansas. So, Big Daddy is super super proud about him and being a hog and performing. I mean, the kids really got some tremendous game when they play in the PNC championship. Yeah, it's unbelievable to watch those two.
He carried his dad for sure.
You tell him that. I'm gonna tell him. No, he knows. Well, you know that those two guys. I just remember when little John was actually little, and to watch that the relationship grow, and it's really something fantastic. In today's world, from that standpoint. But when Joe was showing me around the booth, and I saw the bag and the putter and the clubs in the kid's bag, it was phenomenal. But then Joe says, no, these are not cheapy clubs. These are like John wanted, like, you know, really top quality clubs that a kid can hit.
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. And so, you know, John's had clubs in mass merchandise type facilities before. And, you know, they weren't going back to the Dunlop back, you know, probably 20 years ago, 25 years ago, drivers for $99 or something. I mean, that was John was just signing agreements back then. Now, like, for example, now he really wanted to make a niche for the John Daly line as a high quality product line. In other words, you buy a set of these clubs for your child, that set of golf clubs is going to last them until they graduate to the next size golf club they need to get to. So, you know, we needed to make that product out of pure titanium, tie 6-4 in the driver, 17-4 stainless in the fairway hybrids, 431 stainless in the irons, and then also in the putter. Not many junior sets are made in that manner. Those are just like adult sets in terms of the high quality. It's no different than what major companies do in their premium lines. We just happen to have it in a set of golf clubs that we were able to get at a price from a tooling perspective that we could make it really competitive as a box set. But it's no different than a pro set in terms of the types of product that's going into that in terms of the quality of stainless and the quality of titanium. So, you know, we'll retail. You know, I've been focusing on the market here in the last few weeks since the first of the year, when basically everything's changing in terms of these companies coming out with new product, the tariffs kicking in. So we had already built ours in with tariffs. So we're going to come into the marketplace basically in a junior set like $299 and $349. In a very, very high quality set. And we're right there with some of the clubs that weren't quite where we were in terms of quality and in terms of the types of materials that went into it. And they're now almost priced where we're going to be just because of tariffs. So it's exciting to get a product out there for John that's really top quality at a fair price.
All right. I told you this before on this show, both on air and off air, that you're going to upset a lot of people, Mike. You know, the Titleists of the world are not going to be happy. This was before with the adult clubs. Okay, now you're getting into the U.S. kids, and all these people are going to be upset with you. So you're upsetting the whole industry here, Mike Morgan.
Well, not intentional. I can tell you that U.S. kids has nothing to worry about. It's not a category we want to really excel in. But for John, it made a lot of sense. I will tell you there is another product line that we're working on that would continue the junior set development at a slightly lower price. So we would actually enter the marketplace. I'm under an NDA, so I can't really give you a lot of particulars, but in a little different price point, a little lower price point with some unique products involved there, kind of cool cosmetics, things like that. So that's on the drawing board. It's coming. It's, in fact, I just got some samples in today, so we're excited to see how those look.
See,
but we will be a player a little bit more so in the junior club market.
Even the president CEOs get paperwork, NDAs. They got to sign them. They can't talk about it, But Michael kind of talk around it a little bit. When we come back, to start the second half hour with Mike Morgan. Yes, Northwestern. Write it down. I'm telling you, it is quite the story we're following. We'll be back.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee. What am I giving the driver? He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
We're back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with Mike Morgan, and one of our industry go-to guys now, because he's now that he's given up. I think he retired from Titleist after more than three decades, one of the top sales guys in the company, which is saying a lot because there's a lot of white jackets walking around that show.
Yeah, I was fortunate. There's a lot of good people at Titleist. They elevated all of us. I mean, everybody's good at what they do there, and it's an honor to actually look back on that career and say it was with Titleist.
It was so funny because I actually I was go see our buddy Jim Nance, who's a representative of Titleist and the voice of, as they like to say. And this year the fire alarm went off. That was weird. So we got our golf balls earlier than usual. But I say that because so many white jackets. But I was talking to a couple of Titleist guys that I've known for a while, and Wally's name came up. And yes. Like, well, you know, Wally had this particular parking spot that he parked in, and then he came up through this special tunnel, and then he went up this elusive inner elevator, and then right to his office. So I think I saw Wally like twice in the 20 years that I've been working for Titleist. So it's like a couple of those stories. because I have to check. You know, I'm like, has anybody else experienced that? Yeah, I don't know that I've ever met Wally Uline. So.
Well, I will tell you that Wally Uline, I mean, he was always accessible to the sales force, maybe not always to middle management or something in terms of the internal workings of Titleist, but I could pick up the phone and call Wally Uline, and he would take my call immediately. We had a great relationship, and I know he did with almost all the sales reps. So he was a little elusive in terms of, hey, we need to work through the channels, and work our way through this, but with management. But he knew it was really important for him to be with the pulse of the industry in terms of sales and feedback from the reps. And he was great about that. I have to tell you that.
All right. Here's the operative question. Will he still take Mike Morgan's call? That's what we want to know.
I believe Wally would. I do believe Wally would. I do. I mean, he's just a wonderful person. I got to tell you, he was very kind-hearted. He was intense, but he was just always there for everyone. And I tell you what, I can remember moving over there from McGregor Golf when I was much younger and early in my career. And the director of marketing for McGregor actually took a position at Titleist, and he came to his first sales meeting, and his name was David Overmeyer, and I knew David well from McGregor years. And so we had our closing dinner. Wally spoke. Wally always spoke at the closing dinner of any sales meeting, up until the last, maybe 6-8 years of my career there. But we got so big, the group got so big, but when it was, I would say my first 25 years, Wally just always closed the dinner down with a conversation to the reps and to the marketing teams that were there. It was always very touching. And I can tell you this, and this is the gospel truth, and Wally would back it up. There was not a dry eye in that place. Whenever Wally would finish, we would all go up, give Wally a hug, slap each other on the back, and wish each other well for the year. David Overmyer said to me, I've never seen anything like this. And he said, I honestly believe that this sales force would go over a cliff for Wally Uline. And I said, you got it. We would do that for sure.
Yeah, no, I would believe that. Absolutely. Wally, yeah. Wally, you know, I have had conversations just standing around, you know, when you can get his time, because he's a popular guy. That type of thing. I do miss seeing him at the show, because the white coats are all over the place and he's not one of them. But a guy that really was another one of those industry changers. You know, when you talk about that, and that wasn't obviously Titleist wasn't Wally's personal company, but it was his company, right? So Wally and Ely Calloway and guys like that just made a huge difference. So
no question.
And I think that, you know, Titleist is certainly a different company now than it was under Wally's tutelage and such.
Yeah, but it was definitely different. I'll tell you a quick story, and that's how Wally got involved in becoming management at Titleist. He came on as a salesman from I believe it was MaxFly. I believe he was coming over from the Dunlop MaxFly group, and he was at his first sales meeting. This would go back into the late 70s, and they didn't have the bag line ready. They didn't have the catalogs ready. And there was a couple other things that just weren't buttoned up before the reps were going to go out on the fall trip to pre-book product for that next season. And Wally went up to a couple of the management people and said, I'm just not sure that this is the way that we should look to the future. I mean, I just am amazed that this isn't buttoned up better. And they said, well, if you think you can do better, maybe you should jump in. And so Wally did. Wally jumped in. He said that was his catalyst to get into management at Titleist, was that sales meeting.
Well, it worked for Titleist for a long, long time. And, of course, they've since been sold. But the industry is better for it. I mean, it's amazing the domination of a golf ball company, right? So
it is amazing. They've just taken it to a whole nother level since we had Balata balls and DTs, durable Titleists, and so I can tell you. I'll tell you one quick story. Maybe you have never heard this one, but when Pro V1 was being tested, I don't know if you know how the name Pro V1 was actually brought to market.
Well, I heard this story, but go ahead and tell it because I want to hear it again, and I know there are people out there that have not heard this story.
Yeah, so I'll just tell you real quickly. It's so funny because whenever you develop a golf ball and you're going to send it the tour for testing, you've got to take it through the USGA, and then they have to test the golf ball and approve it, and then you can get it out to the tour for testing. And so when you do that, you basically just put some kind of identification, on the side stamp of the ball. It doesn't mean it's the name of the ball. It's just the designation. The R&D department will do that. So they just put on there Pro V1 with the title of space stamp. So it was just a side stamp. So that's how the USGA would take it, and they would just mark it through all of their testing and say Pro V1 approved here, Pro V1 approved there, Pro V1 approved there. So all of that would happen, and then all of a sudden word had leaked out because the testing with some of the players early before we actually were going to put it on tour, they had been talking about this ball called Pro V1. Well, Wally was like, that's not the name of our ball. I mean, why are people referring to this golf ball as Pro V1? That's not the name of the ball. We haven't even named it yet. He wasn't even sure how or why it was called Pro V1. And so the R&D department said, It's the name of the project. It's basically prototype veneer first edition. And Wally goes, we've got so much press, that's the new name, Pro V1. It happened by accident.
And a lot of things in golf do like that. In this industry, it's just sometimes you fall over it and you come up smelling like roses. It's crazy. But that's, and that ball, it's the first ball in my memory in a lot of years that has had the impact that it has.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. We thought lightning in the bottle at that first tournament, which was in Las Vegas, I believe, and I can't remember the player that won it, but it was just amazing. He won by like seven shots, and there were several people playing the golf ball, but he credited the golf ball at the end of the event, just that it just telling me that the Pro V1 ball is unbelievable, and that just kind of got it going. And then USA Today ran, you know, something and said the ball that turned the golf world upside down, and the next thing you know, it's off to the races.
Yeah, it happens. Like, I just think about the great innovator Ely Callaway, and when he came out with Rule 35 golf right. balls, and I still have a few in my golf garage tucked away from that standpoint. Yeah, yeah, what's Rule 35? You know, it's like, you know, get out there and have fun with the game. You know, it's just one of those right. things, you know. That,
it was an interesting way that he marketed that, you know, with 5-ball sleeves, 10-ball dozens. It all had to do with, they did their research and found out average golfers might use five golf balls in a round of golf, lose 5 golf balls. It was kind of interesting how they really thought through that whole process. And maybe it was a little too complicated for the average golfer to understand. It was really different, but you know, it was a good golf ball. It was just kind of marketed differently.
Well, this Ely in a sentence right there, Mike, as we're talking to Mike Morgan, yeah. industry insider. That guy at Northwestern on TW with Keith Jones. But that was it, you know. And those sleeves that the Callaway balls came in, they were plastic. They weren't the paper kind, you know.
Right.
You know, it's like
They were very unique, and they were kind of the buzz of the show. I remember Wally talking about it. I said, well, that's really different. But it just didn't get any traction, and it was just so different. I think that's probably why it was just – difficult. If you think about it, if you're a golf shop and you're putting sleeves in chutes, there was no way you could put those sleeves in a chute in the golf shop. It was just a different way to present golf balls, and I think that's good. I think it's nice. Difference always, you know, something to consider, but I think it was a very traditional channel of how golf balls had been sold, and it was just so different. But they made a good golf ball. It's back when they had their own factory and they were doing their own thing out west in California. But then they, you know, decided to sell off that facility, or basically just make it into a close down the ball facility, and then just put in the warehouse there. And then they decided to get real serious again about golf balls, and have come back really well.
Yeah, it's interesting. This has been great. I had Mike on to talk about the PGA show and everything that Northwestern is doing in the booth and stuff. But I love the reminiscing here with, you know, because Mike was been at all these shows and remembers when the Rule 35 came out and such. And it was a huge buzz. And there's certain things at the show just catch on fire. I was telling somebody at the show about this shoe company that was named Byte, B-I-T-E, Byte golf shoes. Yeah. And what they did was, their promotion was, bring your golf shoes in, whatever they are, take them off and put the new shoes on and wear those. And word spread like nobody's been. What do you mean you're giving away pair of golf shoes? Like one golf shoe? No, a pair of golf shoes. You go, you trade yours in. So they had all these, you know, so people would they go in their closet and get some whatever they were. You know, I mean, it was in Orlando, so hopefully they packed some stuff. But, you know, there were all kinds. I think there were some FootJoys in there, too, tell you the truth. There was just – but it was a great promotion. And
it was.
You know,
yeah.
the industry has, across the years, been creative, but then that creativity gets sucked out or goes away. I can't figure it out myself personally.
Right. Yeah, I understand. You know, it's fickle. It comes and goes pretty quick.
All right, so back to the kids' golf clubs, because I'm enamored with those, and a lot of it has to do with John Daly's face being on the bag. So it's a bag, yes. It's a putter. I didn't count them all, so I can't. You tell me and the listeners how many. You know, if it's 5 clubs or 6 or whatever it is in the bag, but
yeah, I can tell you real quickly. So the 5 to 8-year-old set would have a driver, a hybrid, a 7-iron. A pitching wedge and a putter, bag, head covers, and that would be the $299 set that, as it sits right now, we haven't hit the marketplace with it yet, but that's what we're projecting it will land at. And then the 9 to 12 age group picks up one more club. So basically it picks up a 3-wood or a fairway wood. So you've got a driver, a 3-metal, a hybrid, a 7-iron, a pitching wedge, and a putter, golf bag, head covers. that one will come in $50 more just because you got an extra club. It's in a fairway.
So that brings me back to the manufacturing of said clubs and such, because this phenomenon that you have going on at Northwestern fascinates us here on this show, because not, you know, again, did you take the Phoenix and rise it from the ashes, but you have this golf company that is doing things totally different than the rest of the industry. Now, yes, there are some, I think a Tour Edge kind of, you know, vacated a spot that you kind of slid in there. And my buddy John Claffey's been doing great work for them and Glad, and he hired a top guy, Tim, from Wilson. So those guys are, you know, playing, trying to play an even higher level. But Northwestern says, oh, well, we can play in that level too at some point. So, you know, you continue to expand. So you've got the kids' clubs to start everybody playing. Then as they graduate into the adult level, and then as they get to be even better than that, I believe there's some professional-like clubs that are on the horizon too.
Yep, that's correct. Thank you for referencing that. That's coming June, July. It'll be available in the retailers in the fourth quarter. We'll start getting them out to social influencers and key people early June to start getting the buzz out there and start getting people talking about it. The traditional Thunderbird line that we currently have, which is designed as easy up, easy trajectory, get it up in the air, it goes forward, and it's easy to do that. We look at things like a fairway wood that's a 3HL, just to give an example. So that's a high-lofted three wood. So when I did a lot of fitting with Titleist, I found very, very few people that could hit three metals off the fairway. You get them off the tee, but not off the fairway. Interestingly enough, John Daly mentioned that to me when I was working with him down at Dardanelle. He said, Mike, I can't hit a three wood off the fairway. I said, well, join the club. I don't know many that can. I said, well, you don't need to. I mean, you can use it off the tee box, but he also had a one hybrid that was made for him by Callaway. And I said, you really kind of have that covered. But I said, let me show you something. I showed him the 3HL. And basically what it is, whenever I would fit somebody, the three wood would never quite get high enough and not get enough carry distance. I would put another club down there. It would be an 18 degree instead of a 15 degree. And they would hit it. And they'd go, my gosh, I've never hit a three wood like that. And they'd say, what is that? And I said, that's your new three wood. I said, look at your numbers. How do they look? They look fantastic. I'm 18 yards longer. I never hit anything like that off the fairway. What is it? It's your new three wood. Then I'd have to tell them it's really a five wood. So basically what we designed was a three metal length, but with a five metal loft, 18 degrees. So you have the benefit of the length for extra distance, but you have a five wood loft, 18 degrees to get it up in the air. So that's one of the things that helps the Thunderbird line as more of a beginner or entry level to get the ball up in the air and go. Same thing on the 6HL. The next fairway in the line is a six wood, and that's a high loft. It's really a seven wood, but it's in a five wood length. So it's kind of a fun set where people go out and hit it and they go, my gosh, I've never hit that before.
With Mike Morgan of Northwestern, we'll be back. And we're back to wrap up the show, spending the time with Mike Morgan. It's been a pleasure to spend the hour.
The Pro Series would be more for, you know, the more aspiring golfer who wants to get to the next level. We call it the 85 percenters that fall into that traditional Thunderbird line. But the Pro Series will hit what we call a 10%. So from 85 to 95%, there's a lot of golfers that want to go that next step. You see that with Tacoma. They're doing very well in that $600 to $900 range for a set of irons. And you see Vice, you see there's a lot of direct-to-consumer companies trying to do that, and some of them doing very well. We just see it as, you know, we're going to take an extension from our current Thunderbird, reduce it down in size. We love the way that current Thunderbird reacts when you hit it. Its ball flight's really strong, really good. We just made it 20% smaller, thinner top lines, thinner soles, just a player profile when you set it down. The cool thing about this is we're going to put the new Dynamic Gold mid-shaft in it, which is brand new. We're going to put a Eaton Golf Pride grip on it, and it will retail in the $500 range, $499, and a lot of excitement in the industry around what that is in terms of that Pro Series, that category that it falls into. But most excitingly, it's the price under $500 for a pro set of irons.
So how are you doing it? I mean, that's an amazing number, and people just heard it, and they probably wouldn't need to hear it again, because under 500 for a set of irons.
Yes, sir. I've had this discussion with a lot of people, and it just really is back to, you know, we don't pay that much different in price for our product as does our competitors that do a lot more volume. I'm just going to say that to you. We're all fairly close in terms of what our drivers cost, what our irons cost. It really boils down to how much do you have to tag onto it for the aftermarket in terms of bringing it into your warehouse, and then how am I going to sell it? Am I going to put it on the tour? Am I going to fit it? Am I going to go out there and spend the money for fitting tools? Am I going to have a full-fledged sales force that takes it into the golf shops, and you start adding this on, you start advertising, throwing advertising dollars on top of that. And the next thing you know, I mean, that driver that we can sell at $229 because we're not doing those things, we can do it. A set of irons with OEM, high-end, best quality products, newest models in terms of shafts, we can do it because we're not spending those kinds of dollars after they get into your warehouse. I mean, that's our mantra, is just pass along the savings to the consumer rather than trying to drive the consumer into the retailer or the golf shop by spending $8, $10, $15, $20, $25 million. And then the retailer makes less money because, you know, they can't make as much profit because there's not that much. The major company has to be able to price it to where they can make money. So everybody kind of gets involved in this high end. And I'm just saying, and this is just my personal opinion, but it's just 5% of the market that wants to pay $1,500 for a set of irons, $2,000 for a set of irons. I mean, basically a $750 driver off the rack. If you're in that 5%, you normally don't do that. You normally get fitted for that driver, and you probably get an upcharge shaft. So you're probably closer to $850 or $950, you know, for a driver. What we're going to do on the Pro Series on our side, just so you know, we're also going to bring out a driver fairway hybrid. They will have interchangeable shafts. And one of the things that we'll be able to do is we sign an agreement with UST Mamaya to have a very, very lightweight shaft that will be the spec shaft in the Pro Series, and we'll also offer it in the Thunderbird Series. It's a 35-gram shaft, which sounds crazy. It's probably half the weight of what you're currently playing. But I will say this. It's a mathematical axiom. You will hit it further. I promise you, you'll hit it further in terms of swing speed because you have to swing it quicker because it's lighter. So all things being equal, it's going to swing faster. So the mass against the mass, it's going to be faster. But I got to get the spin right on the shaft. You know, maybe it spins up too much for you. I may not be able to get you more distance, although we've tested 47 players to date, and every one of them has gained considerable distance. So we're excited to come out with something that's very unique that will be in these drivers and fairways and hybrids coming out in midsummer.
See, I need to change his nickname. He's the magician. He's Mike the Magician Morgan. Now, you know, forget the CEO, forget the president, all this stuff. Talking numbers now. He's talking not just price and numbers. He's talking distance numbers. He's talking grams. He's talking cutting weight on the clubs. It is a phenomenal story going on in Northwestern, but the guy knows what he's talking about industry-wise as well. And we're just out of time. It's always a pleasure to spend time with Mike Morgan. He'll be back on the show, but get out there and practice your game. We're out of time. Practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.